This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick.
This is about how much better things can be.
I think this is an important accomplishment for the country. My view of this, if we can't sell this to the American people, we ought to go into another line of work. I'm gonna wait till the midnight hour when there's
no one else around. It was after midnight. The Senate passed the GOP tax plan. It was a party line vote, 51 to 48. Following a House vote yesterday. Now, the House is going to re-vote again today for procedural reasons, but that bill's going to pass easily. So the Republican tax bill is all but done. You heard from Republican Senate Leader Mitch McConnell at the top there. A bill this big requires a big sell. $1.5 trillion in unfinanced tax cuts. Huge cuts for corporations and for people at the top of the income scale. How do you convince voters that this is good for them? Well, so far, Republicans haven't. Approval for this plan is somewhere in the high 20s. But there have been some big claims made about this bill and the effect that it will have on millions and millions of Americans. So today we're going to tackle some of those claims head on. Daniel Shaviro is the Wayne Perry Professor of Taxation at New York University School of Law. And he's with me in the studio now to cover some of the claims and the counterclaims and all of the things that the politicians have said this tax plan does and doesn't do. Daniel Shaviro, thanks for being here.
Sure, happy to be here.
Well, let's take one of the biggest ones. One of the biggest claims about this bill that does add $1.5 trillion to the deficit is that that's okay because all of the economic growth will pay for that $1.5 trillion. Let me play you Congressman Tom Cole from Oklahoma.
Eventually, actually, it does pay for itself because it does, under every estimate, it varies which one you read, speeds up growth.
Daniel, that's a claim you hear from a lot of Republicans, that all of the economic growth that come from these tax cuts will just go right into federal coffers and that deficit will be wiped clean.
That's not really in dispute. It's a lie. There's not a single reputable economic study that shows that. It is true that most of the studies show a slight enhancement to growth over the next few years, although then with the debt overhang, a slowdown after that. But there is no study whatsoever that shows it as less than a $1 trillion increase in the deficit. And that's assuming they don't extend all the things they said they wanted to extend.
If that's the case, then this is not a new claim from Republicans. Republicans have claimed for decades and decades that tax cuts pay for themselves because of growth. Why do they stick to that claim if there's no evidence for it?
Well, they've embraced a lie because they find they benefit from doing so. Let me give you a comparison. In 1981, the Reagan people claimed that the tax cut would pay for itself. At that time, there was less historical evidence, so it was easier to believe that it was true. When it turned out to be false, within the very next year, the Reagan administration changed course and realized that they needed to raise taxes, and they did in 82, 83, and 84. But that was a different era.
Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, went one better. He said not only will this tax cut pay for itself, but it will spur so much growth that it might actually reduce the federal debt. You're saying there's no way that's
true. He's a liar. If he believed that was true, he would have allowed the Treasury professional staff to look at that. Instead, he stated publicly that the Treasury staff was looking at it, but he actually made clear in-house that they were not allowed to look at it. And by the way, the Joint Committee on Tax Study, which shows it losing only a trillion, is the most optimistic study out there. It appears to me that they changed a lot of their parameters to be more pro-growth because they were under so much pressure from the top. There's no study that shows it even coming close to paying for itself.
All right, let's move on to healthcare, because another thing this tax bill does is gets rid of the individual mandate. That's one part of the Affordable Care Act, certainly not the whole thing. Here's Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic leader, warning Americans what'll happen if the individual mandate goes away.
It will unravel the ACA, 13 million more uninsured Americans, exploding the ranks of the uninsured.
Getting rid of the individual mandate, Nancy Pelosi says, will explode the ranks of the uninsured. Is that true?
That is probably true. I think there's some uncertainty here about exactly what the mandate will do, but 13 million lost health insurance people is the median estimate by the Congressional Budget Office. I think it's very respectable. It could be a little lower, a little higher. Her claim that it'll unravel the ACA altogether is possible. It's an issue that there's genuine uncertainty about whether it'll do that or not.
All right, let's move on to a key claim of this tax bill, because we know that very rich people get a big tax cut. We know that corporations get a tax cut. We know that people who own pass-throughs get a big tax cut. But what about regular old people? If you want to sell a tax plan like this, you got to convince middle-class voters that they're getting a good deal too. So here's the president.
My council of economic advisors estimates that this change, along with a lower business tax rate, would likely give the typical American household around a 4 $4,000 pay raise. And that's money that'll be spent in our economy.
There's the president. The average American middle-class family gets $4,000.
That is really unambiguously false. Actually, Trump's statement was literally true in the sense that the head of his Council of Economic Advisors, Kevin Hassett, who actually is a respectable economist, said that. But Hassett had to wildly distort and misstate studies in the literature in order to make that claim. There's also no time frame for it. It's basically, I would say that rather than being 100% false, like Mnuchin's claim, that's about 99% false only.
Most middle-class families can expect a couple of $100s more next year, and then the out years are a little more ambiguous.
If they allow things to expire as they're currently scheduled to, then I think most middle-class households get a tax increase. Plus, the Republicans are already planning to scale back Social Security and Medicare. And if you think about something like the mandate, people who are on Obamacare are going to have their premiums go up to some extent. Also, when you just think of paying for it, I think the bottom 99.5% of the country is going to be worse off from this in 5 to 10 years.
Okay, now you just mentioned Social Security and Medicare and entitlements. Paul Ryan has been talking about this a little bit. He said welfare reform is next in his grand mission to reorder the role that the federal government plays in Americans' lives. But here's Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader of the Senate, warning Americans that their Medicare and Social Security are next.
Social Security and Medicare are at risk in a plan like this, because if you're going to so dramatically increase the deficit, then Social Security and Medicare are going to be under far greater risk. And that's what Republicans have done.
Chuck Schumer is saying that if you add $1.5 trillion to the national debt, eventually people come along and say, gee, sorry, we just can't afford all of these expensive entitlements. We got to fund the Pentagon. So Medicare is going to get cut.
I think it's clearly true that it puts Medicare and Social Security into greater risk. It's true that Medicare is already, and Social Security to a lesser extent, in fiscal risk because they have problems paying for themselves in the long term. This definitely makes it worse. And also, if Schumer is saying that this is a Republican plan to step one, tax cuts, step two, Medicare and Social Security cuts, the fact that that's what Paul Ryan says is his plan certainly adds credibility to the claim.
Well, Paul Ryan hasn't said that specifically, we should be clear. Paul Ryan has said welfare reform and past versions of the Ryan budget have privatized Medicare into a voucher system, have cut Medicaid, or have proposed to privatize parts of Social Security.
That's right. Yeah, he said he wants to do these things in any event. And also, I think the arguments for and against doing them would be there in any event. But it is true that the tax cuts will add to the pressure for it.
I want to talk about simplicity. One of the big sells of this tax plan was fewer tax brackets. Your taxes are going to be simple, not complicated. You might even be able to file your taxes on the front of a postcard, Paul Ryan said before this debate got started. Has that happened?
That is not true. For some middle-class people, it'll get simpler because they won't be taking itemized deductions anymore. Simpler, but very possibly paying higher taxes. For rich people, they're going to be paying a ton. I don't know how many millions and millions of dollars to their attorneys and accountants in order to come up with scams and tax planning ideas to cut their taxes. They'll be happy to pay that money because they'll be more than making it back from reduced federal tax liability. But this makes the tax system more complicated at the high end than it has ever been before in U.S. history. Basically, what the tax bill says is a dollar isn't a dollar anymore. A dollar from a pass-through, a dollar from employment, a dollar through a corporate that you're a personal corporation, they're all different. So people are going to be coming up with scams to relabel. When I say scams, it doesn't mean they're illegal under the bill. It's just that they wouldn't be legal under a sensible bill. Ways to reduce their tax liability, to put everything in the lowest category, and to what we call arbitrage, to pay themselves money where it's deducted at a high rate and included at a low rate.
One bit of advice I saw on social media was, hey, if you have the money, buy the building that you work in, charge yourself exorbitant rent, and then just pass all of that money through your business instead of your personal income. And voila, you're going to get a lot of money out of that.
And let me say something about that. One, if you charge yourself, quote, a fair rent, that works under the laws that they're passing today. Paying yourself an unduly high rent, in theory, the IRS could review that and say that rent is phony. But think of the IRS staff levels. There's no way they're going to be able to review very many of these claims.
All right, let's end on one of the biggest and most important claims of this tax project, and that's American jobs. So we're at about full employment right now. I know that a lot of economists say there isn't really a lot of room to drive unemployment further down, and yet the claim is that this is going to bring back American jobs. Here's the president.
If we do this, if we unite in the name of common sense and the name of common good, then we will add millions and millions of new jobs, bring back trillions of dollars, and we will give America the competitive advantage that it so desperately needs and has been looking for so long.
Competitive advantage is one claim. Bringing back trillions of dollars in repatriation is another. But what about the jobs claim?
The jobs claim is basically false. Now, the thing is, there could have been a Republican tax reform plan that would have permitted more modest versions of these claims to be made. For example, with a lower corporate rate, it is possible that you get more investment, and I would say probably more higher wages than more number of jobs over a very long time frame and at a much lower amount than Kevin Hassett said. He's kind of ridiculously overstating the claims here. And again, when you're sort of at full employment, that's pretty much a constraint. I mean, who are the millions? Are they going to be going to the nursing homes and the nursery schools to find millions of more people to work who aren't working now? It doesn't really make sense.
So, Daniel Shaviro, we've talked about many of the claims that have been used to sell this bill. It stands at somewhere around 28% popularity anyway. I don't know that Americans are convinced that this is a good deal, but we're going to let you go. What's the bottom line for you?
The bottom line is that this is really a debasement of the legislative process. There's never been anything like this before. The Bush tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 were rightly controversial, but there was a good faith argument for them, and they had reasonable rationales. This one is really a heist, and I hate to use such strong language, but really a scam in favor of Republican donors at the expense of the rest of the country. It's not the type of legislative process we've ever had before from either party over a long, long history.
Daniel Shaviro, professor of taxation at New York University School of Law. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Well, there's another claim about this tax bill, one that you've heard a lot. The president says he'll do horribly under this bill. It's for the little guy, not for him. Well, that's almost certainly false. Look, the president is a high income earner. Income taxes for his bracket go lower, not higher. The Trump Organization uses dozens of pass-through businesses for income. Those taxes go lower, not higher. The president will likely leave millions of dollars to his children. Estate taxes go much lower, not higher. And it's become a fun little debate on cable news and in Washington. The president says this deal doesn't help him. His critics say, well, of course it does. Oh, well, who knows? On to the next segment. But there's not really a debate. This question has an answer, and it's in President Trump's tax returns. Not theoretically. It's not mysterious. It's in black and white. But the president's response? You don't have a right to know. This isn't a political swipe. The question is whether the president, intentionally or not, is personally making millions of dollars on this $1.5 trillion deal that he has the power to make law. And whether you're a truck driver or a teacher or a doctor or a librarian, whether you wear skinny jeans or mom jeans, whether you wear a MAGA hat or a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, the president's answer to you, again, is you have no right to know. Well, I think you do have a right to know. And you have a right to be outraged. It is your business, and it should outrage journalists in Washington a lot more than it has.